Greetings from the Audible Local Ledger, located in beautiful Mashpee, Massachusetts, serving the Cape, the Islands, and the South Coast as part of the Massachusetts Audio Information Network, your main source for accessible community news and information. The Ledger delivers print information and entertainment to the blind, those with low vision, and the print impaired, read by our very own Cape Cod volunteers and select reading services from around the country. You may sometimes hear their content, but it's the Cape's own Audible Local Ledger, its Cape volunteers, and our South Coast supporters that broadcast local news and information 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. My name is Lynn, and I will be reading you selections from the e-edition of today's Falmouth Enterprise. We start with Problem Routes Yield Bumps on Bikeway by Noelle Anonin. The Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee is taking a hard look at how to prevent the perennial bumps on the Shining Sea Bikeway. Chairman of the Bicycle and Pedestrian Committee, Scott Lindell, talked to the select board during its meeting on Monday about the return of the naturally occurring bumps. "This is the main complaint I get about the Shining Sea Bikeway," Mr. Lindell said. "Some areas in particular are really posing a safety threat. The bumps have been dealt with before by the Department of Public Works," Mr. Lindell said. "The path is removed in sections. The earth underneath is churned to get rid of the tree's roots that push up on the pavement, and then the path is redone. We've been doing this with a paving crew that comes in," Mr. Lindell said, "and that's a lot of money. Yet every few years, the roots are pushing back against the bikeway. The current solution is to, quote, polka dot the path, leaving bright orange dots on top of the bumps to warn cyclists. Warning signs have been considered where the bumps get particularly bad." Mr. Lindell showed a graph of where the bumps have been charted at mile marks. Mile 7.8 has 20 dots or bumps, 6.9 has 18, and 5.9 has 17 dots. Mr. Lindell said that horticulturists and engineers have said that the solution is to simply remove the trees. Invasive black locust trees, which provide the shade along the path, stretch roots underneath the path, causing the bumps. Mr. Lindell said the experts said that by removing the trees, it might solve the reoccurring problem. "We really love the shade," Mr. Lindell said. "There's no doubt that we want to remove the trees. There are places where we can relatively do this." He said that the town can carefully choose trees to fell in order to retain the shade while also getting rid of the roots that cause the most speed bumps at certain sections of the path. "It's less than half a mile of pavement that needs to be considered," Mr. Lindell said. "It's not going to be cheap. You may want to look at more surgical strikes." The next article by Noelle Anonin is titled Drought Prompts Irrigation Water Ban. The Falmouth Select Board Monday night voted to amend the water use restriction to ban all irrigation except for watering by hand. The board learned that the town might be unable to ensure sufficient water supply because of the strain on the water supply. The ban will start Monday, August 15th. "This would be the first time we have these regulations," Acting Town Manager Peter Johnson Staub said. Water Superintendent Cathal O'Brien said the drought had strained Falmouth's water supply and the water pumps. "The pumps have been operating at maximum capacity and worked at capacity all day Saturday. On Saturday, I had to call Peter at home and let him know that we're really struggling to meet the demand, Mr. O'Brien said. Water restrictions were put in place on July 25th and limited residents to watering on specific days of the week. Mr. O'Brien said peak demand mode means the town is relying on the pumps for fire protection. If a pump fails, the water pressure will immediately drop, putting the town at risk for water quality failures and unreliable water access for firefighters. He said the water department has found that other towns on the Cape are in the same situation. Mr. Johnson Staub said the town code authorizes the board to adopt water conservation measures and restrictions given the circumstances. Select Board member Douglas C. Brown asked if the restriction would apply to people with their own wells. Mr. Johnson Staub said the bylaw that Mr. Brown was looking at has language that said if the aquifer was at risk, well water could be restricted. He asked Mr. O'Brien if the town should be concerned about the aquifer. Mr. O'Brien said the ban applies specifically to the municipal supply. Vice Chairwoman Anali Scott Price asked if indoor water supply would be restricted as well. Our observations are it's the irrigation that gets us, Mr. Bryan said, adding that when sprinklers across town turn on at the same time, it puts excessive strain on the already limited supply. Mr. Brown asked if the ban will be enforced. It's aggravating to me to drive around 1 o'clock in the afternoon, Mr. Brown said, noting that he sees sprinklers going despite the odd even restriction and the brilliant sunshine. It just seems that some people are not paying attention to the restriction. Mr. O'Brien said the department will be going around to see if there are any violations and enforcing the ban. The board voted to adopt the ban on all irrigations, save for hand watering. The town website states that repeat violations might result in water shutoffs. The next article is titled Frank Shorter to Run Road Race Again, This Time on Home Turf, by Gilda Geist. Former Olympic long-distance runner Frank Shorter has run the Falmouth Road Race many times over the past 47 years. This summer, however, Mr. Shorter will run for the first time as a Falmouth resident. Mr. Shorter and his wife, Michelle Cox, moved to Falmouth on September 1st of last year from their previous home in Colorado, just days after they had both run in the Falmouth Road Race. Mr. Shorter said he has been living in Colorado since 1974, and Ms. Cox had lived there most of her life. They got married almost 5 years ago, but have known each other for 10. Both had spent time in Falmouth over the years. Mr. Shorter for the road race starting in 1975, and Ms. Cox for her family vacation every September. Mr. Shorter explained that he and Ms. Cox were retired and had been looking to move somewhere, quote, where we both have some wonderful memories and connections. Ms. Cox had friends in Falmouth that she had grown close to over the years, Mr. Shorter said. But he also had a meaningful relationship of his own in Falmouth. I had my connection through the road race people, knowing Tommy Leonard and everyone else involved in the road race, but also through the tradition of staying with local families, he said. For a few years, Mr. Shorter's hosts were the owners of Captain Kidd in Woods Hole. In 1987, Mr. Shorter began staying with a man named Jack Carroll. He would go on to spend 33 years in consecutive summers with Mr. Carroll and his family. I got to know Jack and Wendy, his wife, and watch their kids grow up. And because I guess I kind of was like a part of an extended family, Mr. Shorter said. Mr. Shorter and Miss Cox now live by Little Sipawisset Marsh, on the very street where Mr. Shorter used to park his car when he started coming to the Falmouth Road Race. Courtney Bird and Carolyn, his wife, lived right through the woods 100 yards away, and so I would park on this street for many years and walk through the woods to the party, he recalled. When Mr. Shorter and Miss Cox became official residents after years of coming to Falmouth, they received a warm welcome from their neighbors. As we first moved in, people started to walk up to us and welcome us, he said. We were immediately given all sorts of information, laminated for the neighborhood. His neighbors provided information on who was who in the neighborhood, where everybody lived, what the best local services and businesses were, and more. They also offered their help whenever Mr. Shorter and Ms. Cox needed it. That was certainly a first-time experience for me, Mr. Shorter said. Moving to Falmouth has, quote, felt good from the start, he said. Mr. Shorter said he is hoping to get more involved in the community in Falmouth. He explained that he has done community service projects in the past, such as the Frank Shorter Race for Kids, Health in Colorado, a 5K that raises money for children's health education. In Falmouth, Mr. Shorter is already in touch with the local YMCA and helping with fundraising. The YMCA, without going into detail, was very important to me growing up, he said. It really was an escape for me from some pretty bad situations. A 2018 article in Runner's World profiling Mr. Shorter said that those bad situations came from a childhood spent with an abusive father. As a result, the YMCA served as an escape for him as a child. Mr. Shorter said, and now he wants to give back. For me, it's kind of a full circle thing where I found refuge when I was 8, 9, and 10 years old, and maybe can come back and thank people. This year, Mr. Shorter is looking forward to attending Mr. Bird's annual road race party after he finishes the race. The next article is titled, Experts Explain Causes, Impacts of Ongoing Severe Drought, by Gilda Geist. The status of the drought in Falmouth has been upgraded from severe drought to extreme drought on Wednesday, August 10th, by the National Integrated Drought Information System. Falmouth is the only town on the Cape with this drought status, as the rest of the Cape remains in severe drought. The U.S. Drought Monitor WAVE uses a 5-category system on a scale of D0 to D4 to assess the severity of a drought, and in a particular location. The least severe category is, quote, abnormally dry, D0, and the most severe is, quote, exceptional drought, D4, which Massachusetts has never experienced before, the website says. The severe drought category, D2, is right in the middle, and flanked by either side is moderate drought, D1, and extreme drought, D3. Droughts are caused by, quote, a long period of below normal precipitation, said retired meteorologist Richard S. Doc Taylor of Falmouth. Dr. Taylor reported that there has been basically no rain at all since June 27th, and that there was only 0.3 inches of rain this past July, a phenomenon called North Atlantic oscillation causes changes in atmospheric pressure, which controls the westerly winds. North Atlantic oscillation conditions have been such that the Northeast has been in a high-pressure system since mid-July. Woods Hole Oceanographic Institution Emeritus Research Scholar of Physical Oceanography Raymond W. Schmidt said, "High-pressure systems create dry weather, and low-pressure systems create moist weather and precipitation. High-pressure systems push rain as they come, which is why Massachusetts is in a drought while states to the west have been receiving increased rainfall levels as winds blow west. Kentucky's been getting hit really hard with some heavy rainstorms because the system just sits there and keeps dumping them, and we're sitting here on the dry side of the fence," Dr. Schmidt said. The above-average temperatures this summer, carried in by the jet stream, and the drought go hand in hand. "Higher temperatures maximize evapotranspiration," Dr. Taylor said, which refers to the process by which water gets from the soil on into the atmosphere. "The heat continues to build. It evaporates the moisture from the land," Dr. Schmidt said. "The next day, solar energy goes into warming things rather than evaporating moisture, because there's less moisture to evaporate," he continued. In addition, the Cape's drought-prone sandy soils do not hold water very well. Woodwell Climate Research Center ecologist Christopher Neal said, "How big a deal is this drought?" "A drought like this one is, quote, not that unusual," Dr. Neal said. Dr. Taylor reported similar dry spells in 2016 and 2020, although there was a little more rainfall than that there was been so far this summer. That being said, a typical drought can still cause disruption to communities and ecosystems, affecting the local community. Dr. Taylor explained that there are different kinds of droughts. The National Integrated Drought Information System lists 5: meteorological drought, dry weather conditions, hydrological drought, low water supply, agricultural drought, crops impacted, and socioeconomic drought, supply and demand impacted, and ecological drought, natural ecosystems impacted. We definitely have an agricultural drought going," Dr. Taylor said. The National Integrated Drought Information System website says that D2 droughts typically impact yield and crop size for specialty crops and cause higher hay prices. Due to its connection to a regional aquifer, however, the Cape has so far avoided a hydrological drought this summer. Dr. Neal explained that aquifers fill and drain more slowly than systems that draw from surface water. "That is why water supply has not been a major concern so far this summer, particularly in comparison to the West Coast," Dr. Neal explained. The Falmouth Select Board voted Monday to restrict water use in response to the drought, but that was due to the delivery system, not the supply of water. "Another impact to the community is increased fire risk," Dr. Neal said. He explained that this time of year is typically the driest anyway, but combined with the heat wave and the drought, there is, quote, a real fire risk. He continued, "The risk is still relatively small, but it goes up in periods of drought like this. Drought affecting local ecosystems. Stream flow on Cape is currently designated as, quote, below normal," the National Integrated Drought Information System website says. "This can affect water temperature and local streams, which serve as habitats for fish and other wildlife. Forests here have adapted to tolerate periodic dry spells, Dr. Neal said, so local woodlands are not likely to be very negatively affected by the lack of water. However, the compounding effects of the drought and the heat wave make conditions more difficult for plants and animals, he said. The increased fire risk can actually pose a potential benefit to woodland ecosystems, as wildfires clear out old material, create new growth, and add more open habitats, Dr. Neal explained. Climate change playing a role? Maybe, Dr. Schmidt said, the drought and the heat wave could be a, quote, forewarning of what's to become of summers in the future. In particular, Dr. Schmidt expressed concern about a phenomenon in climate research known as expansion of the tropics. We believe that the tropics are going to expand as the climate continues to warm, he said. It could be that one feature of the expansion is to intrude further into the U.S. and maybe into coastal New England. In addition, Dr. Schmidt explained how climate change contributes to slower changes in weather. With climate change, we're tending to see things move more slowly, he said. That can really amplify a hot, dry spell or a wet and rainy spell. How and when will the drought end? A drought does not simply end when it rains, the U.S. Geological Survey website explains. A single soaking rain will provide lasting relief from drought conditions, but multiple such rains over several months may be required to break a drought and return to conditions to within the normal range. For rain to come back, cold air is needed to allow the water vapor in the atmosphere to condense and turn to rain, Dr. Schmidt said. This is the process through which a typical summer rainstorm happens, he explained. In addition, Dr. Taylor said, more rain would come when the jet stream brings moisture up from the south. He predicted that the drought will end in September or October as the region sees seasonal northeasters. The National Integrated Drought Information System provides data on the short-term and long-term outlook for drought conditions. In the short term, 1 to 3 months, much of Falmouth is expected to reach, quote, extreme drought, D3. In the long term, 6 months to 5 years, there is no drought projected in Falmouth. In Falmouth, there is a 33% to 40% chance of below normal precipitation for the next month, the website says. For the last 30 days, Falmouth and the rest of Barnstable County have seen 25% to 50% of their normal precipitation levels for this time of year. The next article is titled, Affordable Housing Proposal Expected for Falmouth Plaza, by Tao Wolf. Although it is not yet official, town officials are expecting a proposal from a developer this month to build a 156-unit rental apartment complex at the shopping plaza anchored by Staples. One quarter of the units would be affordable, Falmouth Planning Board Chairperson Charlotte Harris said when chatting with her colleagues on Tuesday after the planning board meeting had ended. Although Ms. Harris and other members of the board said they had looked at a preliminary site plan and a drawing, the town has yet received these files, town planner Jed Cornick said in an email yesterday. A town manager's office spokeswoman also said this week that no plans had yet been received. In their discussion, which was recorded by Falmouth Community Television, planning board members said the proposal was coming from developer Kimco Realty, which owns and leases the Davis Straits Road Shopping Plaza. Although no plans have been filed, the town has posted notice of an apparently related public hearing on Monday, August 22nd, at 7:30 p.m. at Town Hall. The hearing is on the application of New Creek LLC for a wastewater flow variance, the so-called flow neutral bylaw for mixed residential commercial overlay district development with affordable housing at 13 Davis Straits Road, the notice says. The newly minted mixed-use residential and commercial overlay district was adopted by a town meeting vote last November. Developers seeking to build within the overlay district must first obtain permission to use the town's sewer system. Because the existing sewer system has accommodated the former Friendly's restaurant and Staples, it may already be sufficient, planning board members speculated. The overlay district is intended to increase density and affordable housing in town by allowing for mixed-use buildings with up to 20 dwellings units per acre in certain business zones, B1, B2, and business redevelopment. It was amended at town meeting to exclude business districts that are not on existing sewer lines, an effort to protect the sole source aquifer and coastal ponds in the area. It's basically downtown, Mr. Harris said earlier this year. It's all along Main Street, downtown, and then around the corner to Davis Straits, and up to the split in the road where the school administration building is. It goes just beyond Trotting Park Road, just to that V intersection. The biggest part of it is the malls that were used to all along Davis Straits. It includes a lot of land now possible for housing. What we're really trying to do is increase the housing stock and make it as nearly affordable as possible so that it is really would be what's now what we're calling workforce housing. The mixed-use residential and commercial overlay district originally started out as the planning board's push for multifamily housing. The board realized, Ms. Harris said, that the best way to get multifamily housing and walkable neighborhoods was to allow for mixed use and flexibility in dwelling unit number and size. The next article is titled Upper Cape Legislators Lead Efforts Against Holtec Wastewater Dump by Alice Tan. State Senator Susan L. Moran, Democrat of Falmouth, and Senator Julian A. Sayre, Democrat of Truro, are hoping to secure a victory in halting Holtec International's proposal to discharge up to 1 million gallons of radioactive wastewater into Cape Cod Bay by attaching an amendment to the Senate's Economic Development Bill. Amendment 63, Economic Impact, which was proposed by the two senators along with other legislators, advocates for the creation of a special commission that will examine nuclear energy decommissioning processes like the one happening in Pilgrim Nuclear Power Station. It will also require hearings in impacted counties to ensure public input and transparency. Senate Bill S-3018, an act relating to the economic growth and relief for the Commonwealth, is in conference committee and is being deliberated alongside the House's version. But Senator Moran told the Enterprise she is confident the bill will pass into law in the next month or so. I think that there is every optimism that an economic passage will happen soon, she said. Widespread outcries from Cape communities, alongside federal, state, and local officials, broke out when Holtec International announced in November 2021 that they would be intending to release 1 million gallons of wastewater into Cape Cod Bay. The decommissioning company purchased the Plymouth Power Plant in 2019 and promised to process the water to bring contamination within federal limits. Since the public hearings were held, a U.S. Environmental Protection Agency advisory against the discharge was issued, and all 15 Cape towns voted in the last town elections to urge state leaders to make sure Holtec withdraws its plan. The company has faced mounting pressure to explore alternative methods and agreed not to release wastewater until a third-party environmental expert such as Woods Hole Oceanographic Institute weighs in. There has been a great outcry that there will be, as I have said, zero tolerance for dumping any radioactive waste into Cape Cod Bay. Many more people are among those objecting, as am I, as is Senator Edward J. Markey, Congressman William R. Keating, Senator Elizabeth A. Warren, and really the whole Cape Cod delegation, Senator Moran said. Holtec's announcement is already negatively impacting our communities. Even the perception of harm puts local industries at risk, and that is before we examine the real risk to our environment and health. This amendment adds to the progress we have made. As the state senator for Plymouth and Barnstable, I will not stand aside while Holtec puts profits over communities, Senator Moran said in a press release when the Senate first approved Bill S-3018. Once the amendment and S-3018 pass review, the required special commission would study the, quote, potential negative environmental and economic impacts caused by the discharge of spent fuel pool water, which refers to the water used in cooling down nuclear reactors in broad terms. The discharge can include but is not limited to any materials created as a waste product of nuclear energy and processed water on any other liquid with elevated levels of radioactivity. The commission would be required to complete a report on its findings and recommendations by November 1, 2024, and would hold four hearings in Dukes, Plymouth, Bristol, and Barnstable counties. Discharge of wastewater would be prohibited until 90 days after the report. The Attorney General, the Secretary of the Executive Office of Energy and Environmental Affairs, or their designees, would co-chair the commission, made up of members from the Senate, House, and various state agencies like the Department of Environmental Protection, Department of Public Health, Office of Travel and Tourism, and Division of Marine Fisheries. The Save Our Bay Coalition is enthusiastic to see Senator Moran's anti-dumping amendment pass the Senate. This amendment is of unparalleled importance in the long fight against Holtec's plans to dump nuclear wastewater from Pilgrim into Cape Cod Bay, said Mark DiCristoforo, executive director of the State Seafood Collaborative and a Save Our Bay member. An earlier version of the amendment contained stronger language and directly outlawed the discharge of certain radioactive materials into Cape Cod Bay, unless satisfying a few requirements. Senator Moran shared that other members raised concerns over its effect on hospital operations and the discharge of medical waste. Knowing the time pressure of Holtec's one-year hiatus, her office and others modified the language to come up with Amendment 63. It provides time up to November 1, 2024, to really review those findings and have 90 days after the report, which would give time for state agencies and activists to potentially file lawsuits. So there are multiple levels of hurdles that we have to put in place before any radioactive discharge happens in the Bay, which we think will also motivate Holtec to look for other means, Senator Morin said. Even if S-3018 fails, Senator Morin has secured another amendment to the state's $52.7 billion budget for fiscal year 2023, which Governor Charles D. Baker, Jr. signed into law on July 28th. Amendment 577 moved the funding for nuclear monitoring and oversight from the taxpayers onto the operators of the nuclear facility, a part of what she called, quote, a multi-pronged approach to stop Holtec. It is her ultimate goal to outlaw any radioactive waste from clear decommissioning. And she explained her reasons for adamantly opposing any such discharge. It's my grandchildren, the health of my community, my friends, and it's also the fact that it goes against all of the important work and expenditures that we've made for clean water moving forward, Senator Moran said. This is our economy. Cape Cod Bay feeds us. The fishing industry, the lobstering, the shellfish, these are all things that have been historically part of the identity of the Cape and going forward. It is the essence of our tourism, economy, and we want to protect that. Bill S-3018 is reviewed by the conference committee, which was appointed to address any difference between the Senate and House versions of the bill. The next article is titled 31st Annual Falmouth Walk by Olivia DiPunti. Every Saturday before the road race, hundreds gather in downtown Falmouth for an event lacking the race's speed, but full of its air of festivity. It's more like a giant high school reunion or a homecoming, Brent Hawkins said of the Falmouth Walk, which will be held on August 20th this year. He made the three-hour-plus drive from Torrington, Connecticut, every year since 1999. He was first drawn to the Falmouth Walk when he met people while working at the quarterdeck that summer. I was like, what's the walk? They were like, it's just 3 miles around town, and we walk and raise money for local charities. And I was like, I can do that. Mr. Hawkins was working alongside, quote, the most charitable bartender and creator of the walk, Tommy Leonard, with whom he had already built a close friendship for over 40 years. Even their friendship can be traced back to a conversation over beer. I met him at the Boston Marathon a long time ago, just going into the Elliott Lounge where he was bartending. I told him my name and I told him where I was from, and we just BS'd for like one beer, and he said, you have to come back next year. He said, come back to the Elliott Lounge and see me. I'll remember you. I said, no, you won't. That's just bartender BS. So I walked in the same day the next year to the Elliott Lounge, and he looked at me. His eyes went big, and his hands started to go up in the air, and he goes, Brent Hawkins, West Virginia University, Uniontown, Pennsylvania. When did you get to town? I had had no contact with him before or since, and he remembered all that. He was just a people person. He remembered me, and from then on, it was like we were best buds. Mr. Leonard organized the walk with his fellow bartender, Eddie Doyle, because they had been, quote, givers their whole lives. When the well-loved duckling statue in the Boston Public Garden was stolen in 1988, Mr. Leonard and Mr. Doyle raised the money to replace it. From then on, the unstoppable duo schemed up dozens of charity events, from the legendary Falmouth Road Race to the annual walk that pulled in $38,000 for 12 charities last year. I know Tommy didn't have two nickels to rub together, but he just did it for the love of people, Mr. Hawkins said. His spirit will forever live on in Falmouth in the fundraising events that have become a beloved tradition for many, like Hawkins, who comes back year after year, for friendships, Tommy, Eddie, and helping out the local people. Billy Harbliss was also, quote, best bloods with Leonard, who was even the ring bearer at his wedding, and agreed that Tommy was the happiest when he was helping someone. Mr. Harbliss was drawn from Holyoke to Mr. Leonard's first walk in 1991 and has come back every year since. What brings him back every year? The people of Falmouth. It's a big gathering of friends, he said. Tommy is there in spirit, and we all give him a toast every year. When you put him and Eddie together, it was just special. They were super people. All they wanted to do is help, and they are not grandstanders or looking for anything back. They just do a lot of wonderful things for all the right reasons. Mr. Harbliss walks each year with his wife, Sally, and his friend Steve Jones, who comes here each year from Boulder, Colorado. Mr. Jones was an Olympian from Wales who placed second in a red-hot race against Dave Murphy in the 1985 Falmouth Road Race. Mr. Harbliss had also competed in 27 marathons himself, and although both their running days are behind them, the walk has become a forever tradition. They have little kids all the way up to people who could barely move, Mr. Hawkins said. They've got everybody, no age limitations. You can go as fast or as slow as you want. The event draws between 600 to 800 people, from parents pushing baby strollers to people taking their dogs along for the walk. The three-mile walk will start at 10 a.m. on Saturday, August 20th at Town Hall Square, once again flowing through neighborhood streets, then down to Falmouth Harbor and past the storefronts on Main Street to finish at St. Barnabas Episcopal Church opposite the Village Green. Annette Messina, who has been doing the walk as a favorite summer tradition for the past 25 years, enjoys the route itself. It takes you all over parts of Falmouth, and it's a different route than you'd regularly take walking, so it's just fun, and I look forward to walking it every year. Walkers gather at St. Barnabas after the walk, where there are festivities with all kinds of food, ice cream from Smitty's, beer on tap, and raffle prizes to bid on. Some things, like a week on the vineyard, go for $2,000 or $3,000. All proceeds from the $30 entrance fee go to the raffle tickets, are divided between a dozen charities. Mr. Harbliss would recommend the walk to anyone. Number one, it is a beautiful course, but more than anything, it helps a lot of people and further proves how successful Tommy and Eddie were at this kind of thing, because no one could say no to them. They had a presence about them, and it was almost like magic. Next, The Holiday Inn Sold by Gilda Geist. Brookline-based property management and rental company Sin LLC purchased the Holiday Inn at 291 Jones Road on July 28th for $8,026,625. The sale was recorded at the Registry of Deeds on July 28th. Built around 1971, the 98-unit building was last sold in July 2014 to Falmouth Hotel, LLC, for $11,225,000, according to the town accessor website. The website lists the 5,727-acre property's value of $6,016,900. The owner of Sina, LLC, Anwar Faisal did not respond to a request for comment regarding what will become of the property moving forward. Mr. Faisal is the owner of another property management and rental company at the same location in Brookline called Alpha Management. I have reached the end of my reading for today. If you know someone who could use our service, or you're interested in volunteering or donating to our organization to keep us on the air reading to the vision and print impaired, please call 508-539-2030. Visit our website, audiblelocalledger.org, or email us at info@audiblelocalledger.org. As always, thank you for listening and all of your financial support. This is your reader, Lynn, saying bye for now.